Hey, folks, this is Jamie joining you for another edition of Movie Moan, your TMT podcast. Joining me here, as always, is the British gentleman agent, Mr. Phil G. Say hello, sir.
Hello, everybody. It's really, really great to be here tonight. Just like last year, it's the Comic-Con show. And just like last year, none of us went, but we are going to make you feel what it was like to be there in Hall C for all these amazing things, but without the experience of being stabbed. So I'm sure you'll appreciate that. Sitting to my left is the host of the Captain Ed Hocken Show on, or is it just the Ed Hocken Show? I never know. On braindeadradio.com, that's the important thing, Captain Ed Hocken.
Yes, it's just the Ed Hocken Show, and once again, we are back here yet again to talk about Comic-Con, once again, not being there. But such is the case, and most of us don't like crowds, so what can you do?
Also, by the way, Ed, sorry, hi, Lou. By the way,
hi, Phil.
No, I was just going to say, before we introduce Lou properly, someone left a comment on last week's podcast. I don't know if you saw it, Ed, but they actually asked what you're a captain of. Now, I said industry, which I think was a snappy line, but I don't know. Maybe you want to explain to people exactly, to those who don't know, exactly what the name means.
Well, I can say, I love the fact I'm a captain of industry. It's something I would aspire to, but I would also state that, otherwise they may have to turn in their geek credentials. It's from Police Squad, and it's Ed Hocken is the captain of the Police Squad. So that's why he's a captain.
Which segued into, of course, the Naked Gun movies, because some people don't know it was a TV show before it was, those movies.
Because I'm actually a very young George Kennedy.
Yeah, you go.
I fell into a Lazarus pit, and I came out much younger, and which is why you haven't seen any photos of me.
Except for those photos of you next to B. Arthur, which I've seen. Those
I heard your role in the 80s casting of Inception.
So that was for Lighthouse, our faithful commented. That's the answer you wanted. Also sitting with us, sorry, horribly neglected by myself just there, and I apologize for it, is the Canadian Canuck, Mr. Lou.
Thank you, sir. No harm, no foul. I just want to throw a little caution to our listeners that while we might not stab you physically, we may accidentally stab you mentally with some of the comments that we're going to give you in the next little while.
Zing.
What does Evil Luke have up his sleeve tonight?
I think he means Inception spoilers, but at this point, made a lot of money.
I think it's more pointless optimism about the Hobbits. I think that's what it is.
There you go.
Now, notice who said that, Lou. Not me.
Bazinga.
No, I mean, they did have that Hobbit panel, though. It was the OneRing.net panel, and it was just pointless. They didn't say anything new. Hey, look, it won't be in 3D.
Change! You got change! It was for an hour.
That's what it seemed like. I mean, what good came out of it, what were the highlights? Like, oh, yeah, we don't want to replace Ian McKellen. Well, we don't want you to replace Ian McKellen. Isn't that funny? That was about it. Whatever. Speaking of Comic-Con, no, actually, we have to talk about reviews first. Lou, what did you see this week? Saw a couple of movies.
Yeah, I saw three. I saw Inception. I saw the latest animated Batman movie, Under the Red Hood. And I also just came back today from Sorcerer's Apprentice with my son. So I don't.
You got a lot of free time, don't you?
Well, what can I say? Time management is important.
Yes,
and
it
plus
is.
I've been trying to stay up in the loop and all the Comic-Con stuff as well. So I really, unfortunately, last week I couldn't be with you guys when we all saw Inception. So that was too bad because
we all went together holding hands.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to be with you when the discussion was fresh. But basically, I love the movie just as much as you guys all did. I thought it's one of the most clever pieces of storytelling construction I've seen in a long time. I hear Nolan was working on the script for almost a decade, and it definitely shows. The thing that really got to me, though, is a lot of the reviews are all focused on how this is a really complicated movie. You really got to follow it. But I didn't find it complicated at all, and I'm not trying to be boastful or anything. I just thought Nolan did a hell of a job dramatizing the rules of what was going on in this movie. So, and the really cool thing about it is the heist is a diversion from the real story. So everybody's sitting there watching this movie. Oh, we got all these rules about the heist. Each level of the dream, time slows down. You need a totem to get back to the next level or back to reality. And he's setting that all up, and he's showing us through the movie, you know, how all those things are layered upon each other. And at the same time, you've got this story about a man trying to get back to his family. And that part of the movie is rather unstructured. You don't really have the hooks to reality that you have with the other pieces. So you're never really sure if his memories are real, or are they just his... Or they filter through his what he's desiring to, you know, in order to get back to his wife. So it's a really clever movie. The only thing I didn't like, and this is it's kind of becoming a running joke with this movie, is the last shot for a couple of reasons. The first one is when he pulls out the top in the middle of the movie and spins it. As soon as you see that, it's almost like one of those Freddy or Jason movies. You know, like at the end of the movie, everybody thinks the guy's dead, but no, last shot, he pops back out, he's still alive. When you see that top spinning, you knew the last shot was going to be that one. And
yeah,
it was just a little cliche. And for a movie that was so free of cliches, I was hoping that he would do something a little more subtle than just go with a spinning top. He could have done the same thing with just having Cobb take the top out, look at it maybe for a second, then look at the kids, and then just put the top on the table or even put it back in his pocket and basically say, I don't care if this is a dream or reality, and go to the kids. And said he had to do that last shot with the top. And I think that's really the only thing that it's the only thing that really mars it for me. The other thing, I'm one of the people that found the movie kind of emotionally cool, but that's a sort of a stylistic thing that I think Nolan has a little bit in every one of his movies. But in this one, it didn't bother me too much because if you're not sure if the portions where the team is being assembled are real or not, you could argue that these characters in his team are basically extensions of his personality.
Yes, they could be.
And the most notable one is, of course, the one played by Ellen Page. Her character's name is... Arianna, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but in mythology, she is the one that helps. I'm losing the guy's name now with the Minotaur. What's his name again?
I'll find out for you, because actually, I've been talking about this with someone else. Actually,
that's Theodeus. Sorry. And she helps him beat the maze to defeat the Minotaur of King Minos. Mm-hmm. So, and she's the only one that really gleams into his emotion, like the reasons behind why she's there in the first place. And then she's basically, to me, she's just you could argue that she's an extension of his emotional, desire state to get back to his family. So... it's a really clever movie, I think the soundtrack is just awesome.
Yeah,
and obviously the showcase scene with the zero G down the hotel corridor was just mind blowing. So it's almost a perfect movie with just those two elements and especially the last shot, which I think detracts from the movie a lot more than it should, but it's just a cliche shot that he should have avoided.
Well, my question to you is, what do you think it meant? Do you, what's your personal opinion? I mean, there is no right or wrong answer as to where you think he is at the end of that film. Do you think he's back home in reality, or do you think he's still within the confines of yet another dream?
I can argue both sides of the coin, so I guess I'd have to say I'm undecided.
Okay.
It all comes down to his totem, and I've only seen the movie once, so you guys have all seen it twice now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Two of you.
I've only seen it once.
Okay, can you clarify for me, there's two shots. There's one where he's talking about going to the safe, and he opens up the safe, and it's his totem that's in the safe, right?
It's her totem.
It's wife?
Yeah, it's her totem.
Okay, because it looked like his. At one point, he took something out of the safe. I thought it was his totem.
It was her totem, and then when she died, he used it for himself, I believe is what happened.
Okay. And the other shot is where he comes back, and just before she kills herself, he comes into their apartment, but she's, like, in a window in the building across the alley. Like, I don't...
I wondered that. That was
how did that happen? Like, did that? Is there like a space that doesn't? I can't figure out the geography.
She rented two rooms, Lou.
She rented. That's what somebody said.
I have no idea.
Somebody suggested that the suite was just like in a giant U, where she happened to go across the street.
Which it could have been, but I don't know. That's a good point. I wonder that myself.
It's not very strong reasoning. I'll give you that. I think there's one. I did enjoy one. Ellen Page is being her totem, and happens to be a gold pawn. So it just happened to give, you know, wonder if there's some symbolism there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's just something I was thinking about.
Yeah.
So, well, of course, if the movie is a dream, I was actually saying this to a friend, the Adrian's complete and utter lack of reservation about joining Cobb initially is what would start it. It was what starts it for me. And, of course, you know, after that he says, do you remember how you got here? You never remember how this starts. And you don't actually see the moment where she, like, shakes his hand and says, okay, I'll join you. It's a bit odd, but I'll do it. Initially, I mean, obviously she goes away for a bit and then she comes back and Gordon Levitt says, you came back, did you? But initially, you know, she just, like, does it. I mean, he says this isn't strictly legal and you don't even see her react to it. It's a bit weird. Specifically designed that way. I'll say something to you about the totem, though, Lou, about the spinning top. I mean, for me, that was actually what provided a lot of the emotional quality for me, for feeling for Cobb. It's the, you know, every time, you know, you don't, with these other guys, you know, they keep going in and out of the dream world, and you don't see them react to it. It's just the norm for them. But you feel like they can deal with it. Whereas every time, and this is something I really picked up on the second viewing, every time poor Leo comes out of the dream, he's like covered in sweat, and he has to spin that top, and his eyes are fixated on, you notice this, it's a brilliantly played, understated moment by him, it's like, you know, it's like having a swig of the bottle or something like that. It's just the thing that he needs to do to get things straight, because he doesn't know, he's lost track of what is real and what isn't. It's exactly what he says when he's explaining how not to create existing places. It's exactly what's happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, sorry, go on, Luke. Yeah.
I just want to say about the totem, he explains the purpose of it in the film brilliantly, to the point where I think people are just buying the concept that, if I have something that's unique to me and then that nobody else knows about, I can use this as an anchor to get back to reality. But, I mean, if the dream is good enough, how are you going to be able to tell the difference between a real totem and a dream totem? Like, it's a sleight of hand trick that I don't really think works. Or if you hold it up to a close scrutiny, if the dream is good enough, you won't be able to tell the difference between your real totem and a dream totem. Like,
That must have been the wife's her argument the whole time.
Yes.
Although I would say if you hold up any of those rules, it's going to fall under extreme close scrutiny. I think that maybe just be taking it far, you know, too far.
Yeah.
If you push any of this stuff, it's going to come apart. But yeah,
we just need
James
to
said.
Face the fact.
Face what?
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Phil went dreaming.
Phil has just been pulled out of a reality there, ladies and gentlemen.
No.
Yeah.
He's back.
Yeah. No, not necessarily. Phil? Well said, Phil.
This can partly hear syllables.
Yeah, he's not. Well, there you go. That's some good job there, man.
Hang up, Phil, and come back on. Here we go.
He is gone, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to keep talking right now.
Okay. So anyhow, I agree. If you start getting into these types of movies too deep, you kind of lose the forest for the trees kind of argument, definitely. But the main thing I loved about the movie is I think Nolan does a really great prestige kind of glamour trick with getting people to focus so much on the rules of the dream world through the lenses of the heist, that the other stuff that's supposed to be real, we just kind of take for granted that stuff's real right off the bat because we're not really paying attention to it. It kind of runs as an undercurrent to the story. So I thought that was really clever. And you just never know if any of that stuff's real or not either. So, and in the end, I really don't know if it was a dream or not because I can go down both avenues and and ended up with two different answers.
Yeah, see, I don't think it's definitive. Everyone's like, oh, well, this will be the definitive answer in 3 years. No, there is no definitive answer. It's no.
and I think Nolan did it that on purpose.
Yeah.
But I'm only guessing. But my gut feeling is that he purposely constructed this movie that both answers are correct, and it's really up to the individual to decide which one they want to go with.
I agree. And Phil is back, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello.
Okay, now Lou, what else did you saw? Two of the Sorcerer's Apprentice. You saw this morning with your boy.
Did.
So
boy.
How was that?
Yes. It was okay. It was.
I assume it was really generic.
It was. Boy meets girl. Boy loses girl. Boy gets girl back.
Boy meets Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage is. Got another wig to add to his growing trophy case. Monica Bellucci. She's kind of wasted. She's still gorgeous, but she's wasted in this movie. And Alfred Molina does a pretty good job as the bad guy. The special effects are okay, but yeah, it's all kind of generic. And they shoehorn in the
King Arthur
Prancer's broom cleaning sequence with all the water and the brooms and
whatnot.
What
about the hat?
There's no hat.
There's no wizard hat?
Oh, come on. So I was disappointed. I heard Nicolas Cage plays this relatively straight compared to his past performances, and you look at that getup and you're like, it's wacky Nicolas, and he's just kind of straight-laced. You go, that's a disappointment.
Yeah, he's pretty straight-laced. And there's no wizard hat. Everybody has either a ring or a staff or something like that. So, and who else? Oh, Alice Creech, you know, the Borg Queen from First Contact is in it.
Really?
But, the cast is pretty good. And, of course, the lead is Jay
Bruchaw or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I heard it's very annoying. He's a very likable actor, but here it's just, we need you to be really dweebish. Okay!
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you like Undeclared or some of the other work that he's done.
Well, yeah, I do.
He's not very likable in this movie. So, and I guess the final verdict will go to my son. He says parts of that movie was pretty boring. So there you go.
Well, it's, did you like National Treasure when it came out? Because I saw National Treasure on Interview, I found it to be really generic and not interesting.
Yeah, but
and this is done by the same director.
Yeah, that National Treasure has pace, though, even though if it's kind of ridiculous pace. But this one has, like, really dead periods where you're just kind of going like, come on, let's get back to the story. This is not really going anywhere. So it's really generic. And that's really all I want to say about it. So I'd put it down as a rental if you're so inclined to see it. The third one I saw was a press screening for, can I do a little pimping here?
By all means. Yes, you can.
Consider this our sister site that I do some occasional reviewing in that for news reporting. I Crave DVD. Got invited to the press screening for this, so it was kind of nice to go downtown to a nice little theater and see this movie. There was a comic book artist there, Ty Templeton. He was steeped in the Batman lore. So
what is the movie you saw?
Batman Under the Red Hood, and it's a adaptation of a, I guess it's a storyline that ran in the comics a little while ago in 2005, and this is a an interesting release by Warner's because it's kind of a changing of the guard in that the voice cast is not your standard Kevin Conroy, Mark Hamill voice cast. Instead, you get Bruce Greenwood's playing Batman, Patrick Harris was doing Darkwing. You've got
Nightwing. Darkwing was a cartoon duck.
Oh, okay.
Do you remember correctly?
Oh, that's right.
Sorry.
Disney,
He fought crime while not wearing any pants.
That's right.
Yeah. And you've got Jensen Ackles from Supernatural is in this as well. The new Joker is John DiMaggio, who does Bender on Futurama.
Oh, my God. How was he?
He's a different, obviously he has a different voice than what Mark Hamill gave. But they both do the laugh pretty similarly, but I got to say that I still prefer Mark Hamill's voice. But I mean, it's kind of iconic by now. You kind of get won over by Joe DiMaggio's voice because the Joker has some great lines in this movie and pretty funny at times. So it opens pretty violent.
How is Bruce Greenwood?
I could hardly tell the difference between him and Kevin Conroy, which
was,
it was kind of a wash. So he did a really good job. It was almost a seamless handover for him. So this movie opens, it's rated PG-13. It opens up with a fairly graphic opening scene, and I don't want to get too much into the story because it'll kind of unravel the whole plot for me. I mean, none of these comic book movies obviously are very deep, but it drives the storyline pretty well, and there's lots of action in it. I'd put it below, I still think Mask of the Phantasm and Return of the Joker are better movies than this one for the animated Batmans, but it's definitely well worth checking out, and I got to give kudos to Warner for, you know, going the extra mile with the voice cast that they hired for these movies. They do a stand-up job in that area. I find the animation was a little stiff at times for me on this one. It's not as good as some of the other ones, but it was pretty well done. So I'd give it probably like a 7.5 out of 10.
Okay.
Those were the movies that I saw.
Can I ask you just one question about that, Lou?
Sure.
Because you guess you've seen a fair share of these DC animated movies.
Yep.
Because I guess they're all like, they're all, because it's animation, I don't exactly understand how this works, but I understand that you have a set budget for these things, and the reason all these movies are only 70 minutes long is because that's all the budget they're allocated, so obviously it costs as much as a minute's worth of animation screen time costs. Do you wish yourself that they could be given the budget to do a full two-hour movie, even direct to DVD, or do you think that they're only okay movies and they're fine being the length that they are?
I would say you'd have to judge that on a story-by-story basis. If you can, I mean, some of these comic books, I don't know how long the story ran for. I mean, how much did they cut out to get it into the 70 minutes, you know?
Well, I'm just thinking, for example, of that particular one that Jamie's not too fond of, Superman Doomsday, where obviously you're trying to tell the entire death and return of Superman's story, which lasted about a year in the comic
over
in
a
70
year.
Minutes.
And the book, I'll just point out, because I actually bought this at a used bookstore, of the death of Superman, is a few hundred pages long, too.
Yeah. Spanned over a couple of different comic books, too. It was like Justice League, something up obscure, Superman Man of Steel, Man of Tomorrow, and then Superman, 75, I remember.
And true enough, about 75 of those pages are just, ooh, ow!
It
ooh,
is.
Ow!
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's probably, I think if you have that much material, it probably sort of like a page of, a panel of comics probably breaks down to, or, you know, so many seconds of screen time. So it depends on how much material, like you said, if the Superman story was like a year's worth, then to me, 70 minutes. And I mean, just the concept of Superman dying and being resurrected. Sounds like it could easily fill a two-hour movie as opposed to a 70-minute movie. But this particular story, I think it's about the right length. So you'd have to go by on a story-by-story basis.
That's fine. That's cool. I just wish someone would give them the chance just to try it out, just to see whether they can, you know, go toe-to-toe. Because as I've said before, they've actually managed to crack, for example, the Wonder Woman movie that they did. I saw it. I've never read Wonder Woman. I have no expectation of what the live-action movie is going to be. But I saw this movie, and in 70 minutes, they managed to do a pretty cracking good job. I was like, they've done it. They've cracked it. They've done a great Wonder Woman movie. And it was only 70 minutes long. By the way, Alfred Molina was the baddie in that as well. He's getting around that guy.
He's on Law and Order now.
Yeah, oh my God.
That's the same for Green Lantern First Flight. It's about 70 minutes, and that's a whole origin story and the Sinestro story, and they do a good job. So,
I'd like to think of the chance, but anyway, there you go.
So what did you – now you finally, after forever.
Moaning for about a month.
Longer than that, the start of this fucking year. Is Phil finally got to see Toy Story 3 this weekend.
You say that like I was wrong to do it. Like
no,
I was
not at all. Not at all. Once you see the movie, you go, oh, it's justified. Because it's worse when you, like, look forward to a movie and then it disappoints you, like, as, you know, noted by Phantom Menace and the Matrix sequels, et cetera, et cetera. This didn't disappoint.
No, man. I would have gladly waited another agonizing decade for a film of this quality. It was – actually, I'll share a little secret with you, first of all. I was not looking forward to it. as much as I have been for the last month. In June, I was swept up in the tidal wave of hype and anticipation, along with the rest of, you know, America. The only difference is you bastards got it, and we had to wait for it. But, of course, last week with Inception blew me away so much, and that movie's all I've been able to think about all week, just thinking about it again and again and again. And, of course, I saw it again on the Saturday morning before I went to see Toy Story 3. So I really wasn't thinking much about Toy Story 3. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, 99%, all these reviews, 5 stars and Empire and all that. I need to keep my expectations in check. It can't be that good. As Mr. Spock would say, I have been emotionally compromised. It's just, it was a tall order expecting a perfect trilogy of films. I believe I said this at the start of the year.
You did.
But that's exactly what they are. And I don't know how 99% of films are going to stand up as the years and the decades go by, but I know that this series is going to be embraced and adored by us and new generations of kids 50 years from now. It's just going to be passed on and passed on. And, you know, and
I agree.
I've got this image of, you know, one of my kids or my grandkids, which is shooting high at the moment, but what the heck, asking that, you know, watching them with me sat in the armchair, and then turning to me afterwards and saying that they wish they could have seen them in the theatres when they first came out. And we'll be lucky enough to say that we did. We were there. It is like Wizard of Oz or another one of those, you know, family film classics where, you know, you wish you could have been there, that are timeless. It's just what we're talking about. These are cliche words, I know, but it does mean something. These aren't empty words. These are classics forever, for eternity. I really believe that. All the Pixar film library is, but especially these are the ones on the pedestal. As far as the film itself, I really like to describe it as a collection of little miracles. That's what I call it. I'll tell you why. It's possible to laugh and cry at the same moment. This film proved it. When Woody calls for Buster, the dog, Andy's dog, and the dog comes and it's just this old thing on its last legs, fat, exhausted, tired. First of all, I've seen that look and that posture on my dog, my old dog, right before they died. And it really stuck a chord with me. And, you know, incidentally, what film did I see right after my dog had died? I Am Legend, which really took my mind off it. Really fucking did, yes. Let me go see a movie where Will Smith chokes his best friend to death because he got bitten. And just to clear up, my dog didn't die of a zombie infection, but still.
Thank God.
Died nonetheless, indeed. Close call there. But secondly, I just got the impression that Buster's not going to be around anymore when Andy returns from college. And it just hit me. It just caught me right here. And I welled up. I couldn't help it. And this is a dog character that had a little cameo in the second film. He's not even a fully formed character. But that's a miracle, you know, that I feel that way about a little cameo. You know, another thing. I didn't realize until an hour into the film that Jim Varney had died and that this guy on the screen pushing Slinky Dog was someone else. I'd forgotten.
That's true, actually. That is his brother or something, I think they heard. Is that right?
Is it really? I don't know, but whoever did it did an amazing move.
And it's not like they cut back on dialogue and just put him in the background. I mean, he's got fair share. I mean, just about as many lines as he did in the earlier two films.
And you know what they could have done? They could have replaced him just like Bo Peep and said he's not there anymore. They could have taken the easy route.
Yeah, he died.
Wouldn't have blamed him.
Yeah, just died. You know, what happened? Died. From what? Butt cancer. You know, moving on. Yeah.
Yes. So, oh, jeez, he's thrown me. So, but that was just amazing. That I've always said the real magic of these Pixar films is the way that they can take really recognizable, famous voices, put them together to a character, and it just becomes one. I mean, that's the magic of animation, especially in Pixar movies. But this was a different kind of magic, that they actually made me forget Jim Varney had died. That's a miracle.
It is kind of weird you think about that, though. Is like, by the time we get to the third one, those are the characters, so you don't really write your review and say, and of course, you know, you don't even stop to say great voice work. It's just sort of a, It's just you. Well, yeah, they're great. They're the characters. You don't even. It's not even like a. You don't even. It's not even in your head to even think to mention that.
Think about how the reviews are written. They don't say Michael Keaton steals the show as Ken. They say Ken steals the show. He's a real person to them. That's an excellent point, Jamie. That's a brilliant point. And a thing about the characters, another miracle I find, is that as usual, as with the first and the second, Pixar just have this ability to so tightly construct the plots of these films that every single thing pays off. There must be about 15 to 20 characters in this film that all get closure at the end. Even the freaking army men get closure at the end. Yep. I was expecting to say them. I was so happy when they did at the end of the credits. Ooh,
well, thank God they didn't have Bo Peep show up. Aren't you glad? I mean, like, that would have been
I agree.
Come on.
Or Etch-a-Sketch. Yeah.
That's right. Etch-a-Sketch is gone. Yeah. Now, I guess my quick question to you, Phil, is what was your thoughts on Hell?
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, this is the horrible position. I mean, I don't want to bore people by saying the exact same thing that everyone else has said. You know, all I can say is that it's just one of those magic moments where the technology, the production design, even though we're talking about animation, it's still production design. We're still talking about cinematography, about the set design,
it's
the way
real.
It's created, the way it's shot, you know, the way it's characters, the music. When it all comes together, it just punches you. It just, Toy Story 3 in its last 20 minutes, it's basically like, it puts you over its lap, and it just spanks you until you cry, and it's not going to stop until you do cry. And I cried 4 times in this film. And like I say, first time was with the dog, second time was with the incinerator, third time was with Andy's mom. Oh, no, everybody knows the moment I'm talking about. And that just came out of nowhere, because I've always said, jokingly, but I've always said, I always felt Andy's mom was the real villain of the piece. She's the one who's always trying to ice these toys. She's always trying to bin them, even when she doesn't know it. But it was nice that, you know, she got some closure herself, like I say, closure there.
Oh, absolutely. But, and that last scene, though, where, you know, he explains, you know, you told me off air, Phil, yesterday, actually, you know, Woody finally got his moment. You know, it's like when Andy's describing how important he is to the little girl and, like, why you need to take care of all of them, but particularly Woody, why he's the special one. You said he earned that moment. That was his. This whole – all three of these movies was leading up to that moment. And that's the moment that probably gets me to that really gets a lump in my throat the most. It's so emotional. Because you're right. You know, Woody was the one who never gave up on him, ever.
Absolutely.
You know,
so important at that moment that you cut to Woody's face, and of course he's not alive at that moment, but even if he's
listening, you know.
Well, of course, yes, well, exactly, but you know what I mean, he's not, he doesn't go up into Andy's face and say, so
bad. I'm real, motherfucker! Yeah.
Zool, motherfucker. But I mean, even if he were, you know, alive at that moment, his face would look exactly the same. You know, it's that grin, the way his eyes are wide open, he's just, he'd be speechless at that moment, and he's in that moment. I would say a flaw of the film for me is that I did feel it in the first act. He got a little bit grating. Like, if he said, "We're Andy's toys," once, he said it 100 times.
Yeah.
I was ready to slap him. But you understand, and it all works out. I mean, because they really do need to sell that for the end to work, and it does. And it's just, you know, yeah, I cried when I thought they were going to be toast. But when Woody achieved that catharsis, I just bawled. And I'm so emotionally invested in a piece of computer data that's a toy, that's even a man-made object, even in the film world. And that's a miracle. And it's just amazing.
Well, one thing I think we agree upon is that, like, the movie needed that. And no one's complained about this, thankfully, but I think it's interesting to point out is that, you know, after the last shot where he drives off Solon Partner and they start to introduce themselves to the new toys in their new home, that – what's the little girl's name? The adorable little girl. I forgot what her name.
Bonnie.
Is the credit sequence where he gives you some laughs. You need that. You need to see that because you've just gone through all that emotion earlier. You need to get some kind of catharsis where you're laughing for a few minutes. So you do walk. I mean,
people put their razor blades away.
Exactly. Well, you wouldn't have put your razor blades. It's happy, sad. There's a difference, you know, at the ending of Toy Story 3. But you needed to laugh, you know, at, like, you know, them doing Spanish Buzz and whatnot. And what were the other things?
I mean, I thought it was chucklesome in the trailer.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that just brought the house down more than anything. The whole Buzz Spanish angle, the wiggling butt as soon as you turned the music on, that got people more than anything. And British audiences, God, I hate living in this country sometimes. British audiences are so bloody reserved. They will not show emotion or clap for anything. So when the film faded to black over the clouds, there was a slight ripple of applause. But me, I was forcibly clapping, and I was giving people harsh stares and say, clap! Clap, you shit! Show some respect! For God's sake, you'll never see anything this perfect again in animation. Well, maybe we will, but I doubt it.
Doubt it.
So, you know, oh, God, I just wish I was in America, where, you know, you guys gave standing ovations for the thing, as you quite rightly should. And just to, you know, mirror what you said before, that I'm quite happy to see short films with these guys. That'd be absolutely fine.
I'm okay with short films with these characters. I think that's perfectly acceptable. Now, a sequel, I'm going, no. But short films, why not? What the hell?
Oh, by the way, just one final thing. Seeing the short film Day and Night, not Night and Day, Day and Night, on an IMAX screen in 3D was pretty much the trippiest thing I have ever seen in my life.
I bet.
That was just, whoa. And people, it's just so amazing about these short films. They really do act like, they're kind of like the way a teaser works in a Bond film. It just gets you in the mood. You know, it just settles you in. If there's any restless kids, it's also a great trick, but if there are any loud or restless kids who are still making noise, you know, the short film shuts them up. So when the film starts proper, they're quiet. It's a brilliant technique.
Well, you get your money's worth, too. I mean, you know, you're paying for, you know, a short film, trailers. Yeah. The way it used to be, they'd show you the trailer for the next one. Not anymore, which is okay. And then you get the main feature. Like, you know, who else does that? Nobody.
Yeah, no one does.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were rumors that... Go ahead.
Oh, I was about to say DreamWorks will occasionally try to half-ass that, but they've never been able to pull it off.
No. I mean, DreamWorks, no. I mean, they've got their strengths. They're certainly trying with stuff like How to Train Your Dragon. I foolishly thought Despicable Me was DreamWorks, so I was giving them credit. Like, man, that was a great movie. I was surprised how good that was. And someone had to say, that wasn't DreamWorks. Oh, fuck DreamWorks.
it was French, oddly enough.
That's right. Yeah, that's so weird. But, yeah, so you liked it, huh, Phil?
It's all right. I'll have to see it again to make up my mind. No, it was.
You will see it again, though.
I'll see it again. I'll probably see it next week. And like I say, it was my most anticipated film of the year. It's ticked off the C list with expectations fully met. On to Tron. We'll see how that turns out at the end of the year.
You got 6 months, so you know, we'll see what happens when we actually see more footage. Okay, well, so. Good. Yeah, go ahead. This is Comic-Con weekend. It's over now, at least the big stuff. We weren't there, obviously, since our faces are intact. A couple of things happened. Phil, you have the list, sir. What happened, sir?
Well, of course, as we probably knew they would, Marvel brought out... They weren't fucking around. They just brought out the big guns. They confirmed some rumors that were badly kept secrets, really, which we all knew, but still, they officially announced that Mark Ruffalo is the Hulk, Jeremy Renner is Hawkeye, Joss Whedon is directing the Avengers. They showed some footage from Thor. They showed a little bit of footage from Captain America, which is amazing considering they've been shooting for a week. And they, of course, to really, really seal the deal, they introduced the whole cast lineup of the heroic cast anyway, for the Avengers. I'll just start the ball rolling.
None of that was really surprising, though. That's kind of the thing, though. Everything we thought they were going to do, they did. I mean, everyone knew they were going to unveil the Avengers cast at the end. Everyone knew that Ruffalo was going to show up and Renner. The only surprise... Not to interrupt you there, buddy, was this fucking insistence on a goddamn Punisher movie again. That was a surprise. You go,
did they actually
really say
that, though? They technically said we're going to do another Punisher film.
They planted the seeds by saying out loud, we have the Punisher rights have converted back to us, i.e. Marvel, i.e. Disney. I think they said they might give it another shot. Which you go, this is now the fourth shot at the character? Give it up.
Yeah.
It's like I said about video game movies. It's as bullheaded as trying to turn a lesbian. You're not going to do it. Stop it. You know.
But would you say it would be fair enough for them to try and put him in another movie as a little bit part or something? I'd be fine with that.
Sure.
Yeah. Or, as I've been saying, and you completely disagree with me, I think, a short film. Just a 5-minute short. If they're really going to do these Marvel short films, have a Punisher short film. We would just bust up a mob.
I would rather them put their efforts to something else. They have given that character so many chances. It's like, okay, let's give the Darkhawk movie or the, you know, Nova movie or whatever. I mean, let's get the obscure characters. I mean, we've tried with Punisher so many times. And let's be honest, if Dolph Lundgren can't do it, goddammit, I don't know who else can.
I think you're being frivolous, but let's move on.
What's that supposed to mean?
La-di-da.
Are you suggesting the star of Masters of the Universe could not do the Punisher?
Well, he couldn't even get a beard going in that movie. So.
Oh, God. He was so tough he needed Lou Gossett Jr. to bring him down. Only that man can do the job. That's, I think, pretty much something.
Well, he was the star of 18 of those Iron Eagle movies, so.
Oh, yes, that's right, yes. First thing I will say, this is actually nothing to do with Comic-Con. It's about Thor and the pictures that have been released this week. Now, you remember last week we got the first pictures which were dubbed the Smiling Hopkins by myself, which people
the sea captain,
like.
Yes.
The sea captain, that's right, Captain McAllister. Arr, is it more iced tea you'd be needing? Ha ha ha, yes. That's right, that's my impression, sorry.
All he needed was a parrot. I swear to God, he just needed a parrot, and he would have been fully cast in the live-action Simpsons movie.
Guess it's that pose, but people didn't like that thing. But isn't it amazing how quickly opinion changes? Because this week they show, first of all, we had a wide shot on Monday of Odin's throne, and we could see, I wasn't even looking, but people could see in the far left-hand corner that Loki was there with the helmet. Just last week's show, me and Jamie were saying, he's not going to have that stupid helmet.
Which I wouldn't have been against. I thought that was a good thing. Don't put that helmet. Some things just don't translate to film, and like, God damn it, there he is in that helmet. I'm like,
it looks good to me.
We'll see. I didn't see the footage. I can't argue yay or nay. All I'm saying is, like, everyone's saying, well, the Thor footage would over well. And I go, well, yeah, it's a room full of geeks who are going to love it anyway. What did you expect?
No, of course. But it's interesting. But so we had that picture, and I made a sarcastic comment that it did look like a set out of David Lynch's Dune, The Spice Must Flow. It looked like that to me. But, you know, who cares? But then after that, of course, we got this really, you know, manly shot of Hemsworth in the rain or sprinklers or something.
I thought he was making a mud pie or something. Thor, mud pies. That's what I thought he was doing.
But it's amazing just that everyone's opinion suddenly changes. Like, it's not like he looks stupid. It's like, look at those arms. He looks buff. God, and people are really
doing this.
It's like that. That's what I imagine them saying. It's all talk back. But still, it's just amazing how quickly opinion changes. And I knew it would happen. And I, like I say, I'm just entirely faithful in the movie. I think it's going to go down a storm, no pun intended either. And let's just hope that filmed that footage and we're going to see it, because it's pointless.
I think they've already been stabbed in the face for the people who tried to film that footage, you know, last night, or break their thumbs or something so they couldn't operate the camcorder.
Interesting. if they don't show the
Thor footage. Well, that's the thing, though. They didn't. Well, that's the thing. They didn't even replay the footage, which I think a lot of people. Or did that? No, they did. I'm thinking of the. Okay, that's something we'll talk about in a few minutes.
In a few minutes.
Yeah, they did replay the Marvel footage. I stand corrected. They did.
From what they describe of Captain America, they showed us a scene involving Johann Schmidt, a.k.a. the Red Skull, with a scene. And I read the description of this, and it seems like the deus ex machina of the piece is going to be the Cosmic Cube. It's not confirmed yet, but anyone who knows their Red Skull knows that Red Skull was quite fond of the Cosmic Cube, liked it very much, so it looks like it's going to be in the movie. It was a quite fantastical object that could do anything. So how it's going to fit into a realistic World War II setting is beyond me, but we'll see how it goes. Interesting that from what they described, he was just Hugo Weaving in an SS uniform. Doesn't have the mask yet, but it's been hinted by himself, who was at Comic-Con, that he does have a mask. So we'll see how that goes. But they also showed some kind of teaser, kind of like a logo teaser that was built from costume tests, and you did see Chris Evans in the suit. And I hope they release that. I really think they should as a teaser. I really do. I don't see why they shouldn't.
Well, it was apparently like they just shot that for Comic-Con, I think, and the everyone said the masks looked silly, but they were really quick to say, look, we just shot that for Comic-Con, just to give you an idea. This is not that's not the suit that's going to be in the movie, or like that's an early prototype version. Or they were
he was on a motorbike. He had a motorbike helmet.
Exactly.
He took out muggers. He was milking old ladies. That's what it was. Yes.
Really? Right. I didn't hear that part. Okay.
Sorry, that's a lame joke referring to the old TV show that you know was bad. But at the end of the year, the panel they brought out the Avengers cast. And the only thing I'll say about it is that I've been cynical about the fact that they're making it for a 2012 release that they go straight from it from the other movies to that. But
it's foolish. I'm telling you, like I said, everyone's reacting to that now because there are a bunch of nerds who were there and in the moment getting to see it for the first time. But you know, look at what happened to Iron Man 2. Iron Man 2 is just not a good movie. They rushed into it. Shoving Avengers crap down your throat instead of telling the story of another Iron Man movie. And, you know, now we're rushing into it. We're taking even bigger risks. They're going to start filming before people have even seen a frame, have even seen Thor and Captain America. What if those movies bomb? What happens? You know, you're basically banking on those movies to click, which they might not. I'm just saying, there's that possibility. And that's why I think, you know, this...
Robert Downey Jr. is in it.
Yeah, they'll retitle it Iron Man 3, The Avengers.
Yeah.
But they're still on kind of thin ice with the fanboys because of the situation with Ed Norton. Granted, it's the general public that matters, and as I just pointed out a minute ago, people didn't really care much for Iron Man 2. So it's a risk, and that's why I'm still just kind of sitting there going, like, surely they're going to push this back a year.
It would not
be a bad thing if they pushed this back a year. That would not be a sign, oh, the movie's crap, they got to wait for it. No, it would be a sign of let's wait and see how these other two movies do so we can restructure it a little bit. Let's emphasize more on Captain America if that's the big hit, and if Thor doesn't do well, then we'll sort of downgrade Thor a bit. That's nothing wrong with doing that. But.
Notice that Jon Favreau wasn't included in the lineup. Just noticed that, which is a little bit, I thought was a little bit odd.
Well, he's not involved with Avengers.
I thought he was producing it. He said he was.
He might be. That's good. I didn't think about that. That's a good point, though.
He didn't say that last year, that he was having a hands-on thing with it, but maybe that's changed.
Well, he is. Well, that's a good point.
He's doing something. I don't know. It's the producer. Producer can mean a lot of things.
There's a lot of producers on a movie. How many of them actually are directing?
It could be like an executive producer, which is basically just a figurehead title.
It's a gimmick.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or maybe he shows up as that limo driver again. Happy Hogan. Who knows?
I was hoping he would play the clown. I just watched Seinfeld yesterday, and I saw he was playing a clown in an episode of Seinfeld. Maybe he'll be reprising that role. I was just thinking out loud.
Well, that's an interesting idea, because I wonder who the baddie is going to be in the Avengers. I heard a rumor that it was Loki, but I hope that's not the case. I hope it's the leader. I love the leader. No, leader.
The leader is good. The leader is
such a follower.
We spend our will as the day. No, it's true, though. I hope it is the leader. I think that would make more sense myself, but, you know, that's just me. As a nerd, I'm excited. Look, the movie may well suck. I don't have huge expectations for that in the same way
I'm really intrigued to see how Joss Whedon is going to handle this material because his take on dialogue is so different stylistically than what's going on with the other movies right now. Like, they're pretty straightforward. He likes to turn language and bend it, and is he going to do that with this? I don't really see how he can get away from that.
Well, he is doing rewrites on Captain America. I mean, that was reported. So this was a little bit of a segue, which I think was a smart move, frankly. So, I don't know.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, but Tyler.
He's good with big casts. So I think he was a good choice, but I just think stylistically this is going to come off quite a bit different than the other movies.
Well, it was smart to get him for that reason, as you just said, Lou, and also just for the nerd cred. Let's get someone who's going to – Favreau would have done fine. He's good with ensembles, but it's like, you know, you want someone who's going to get people extra excited. Certainly unexpected when it got broke a few months ago, but, you know.
But he's – I mean – He gets. I mean, people. There are fans out there that, you know, still worship the Whedon. But let me tell you something. Some people do, and some people don't. He's not to everyone's taste, but the people that do. I'll tell you what, dude. If he fucks up the Avengers, oh my god, he is.
Yeah. I don't know if it's gonna be. I get the impression it's not gonna be so much him fucking up the Avengers, because this feels like one of those movies where the studio's calling the shots. And again, it's like some people were saying, as a defense mechanism for the Norton debacle, well, you know, Josh Whedon met with Ed Norton. And as we just pointed out last week, it's like, yeah, Josh Whedon has no kind of political clout to say, I'm Josh Whedon, goddammit, and I want Ed Norton in this movie. And of course, Kevin Feige is going to go, you're Josh Whedon, and the only movie you've made is Serenity. Now go sit in the corner. You know? So yeah. This could be one of those movies where the studio is going to have so many directives, this, and Whedon comes in, plays some of his strengths, but this could be a case where the studio just overnotes the hell out of this movie. Who knows?
Yeah.
Actually, we should... Sorry, Lou, go on.
but I just wanted to add, because Whedon and Abrams did a panel together, and I found it quite hilarious how he was pimping up how Abrams' reboot of Star Trek is like the gold standard for bringing together such a, you know, a famous group of characters and launching them in a new enterprise. And then when you look at something like Serenity, which went out of its way to lampoon a lot of the, you know, the basic principles of like Star Trek movies, like, you know, where like Kirk would say, if I'm not back in an hour, leave and don't come back. Whereas in, you know, in Serenity, you see, if I'm not back in an hour, you come and get me. he does that stuff, turns it 180. So like I just trying to wrap my head around how he's going to basically approach what's really like a real corporate type movie and make it his own. Like his style is like so on the other end of the spectrum from what this movie's geared towards.
And the only thing I wanted to say about Whedon is it's not like I want to make it clear that he is self-aware about this stuff. First of all, he made a great comment on the actual Avengers lineup thing, saying that he is going to ruin it. He said it himself. He said, as a joke, I'm going to ruin this, and I don't know what I'm doing. I need your love, which is funny. And also, one other thing is that I absolutely hate Alien Resurrection. I can't even watch it. I don't even consider it part of the thing. And I consider him partially responsible, I'm afraid. Like, all the zingers in the
Wasn't that funny? Because he doesn't. So.
no, but this is the thing. On that panel with J.J. Abrams, he had this great line where he said, well, he was talking about something about, like, what's the fan, so what do you treasure that's like geeky or something? I forget what the question was, but basically he said, well, I have an alien egg at home, but I had to destroy the franchise to get it. Thank you! You are absolved, Mr. Whedon! You said it! That's great, let's move on. That's great.
Speaking of, I don't even know if I'd say the next topic, I wouldn't even say it's the DC panel. I mean, it was basically Green Lantern. I mean, a lot of these people were saying rumors like, oh, they're going to announce Batman 3 and Man of Steel at Comic-Con, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, that was never happening. So basically Green Lantern represented, and the footage was kind of weird because we were talking earlier about, like, oh, well, you know, fans were excited to see the footage of the movie, so of course they loved it. Well, it was like, what, 90 seconds at the Green Lantern panel, and they didn't even replay it, and there's been some kind of mixed results. I mean, some people, the people who were actually being realistic about seeing 90 seconds of footage instead of just jerking off to it, it's just kind of, wow, they didn't really show anything. They didn't show the suit. That was kind of the big thing.
They showed a fist.
They showed a big green fist that was in an early script, and that was kind of it. That was the highlight.
Yeah. I was saying to Jamie yesterday, actually, that I really felt, after the way that the photos have gone down especially, that all they really needed to do in the footage was show one shot of the costume forming on him, just so people can at least get a feel for how it plays in the film, how it looks, you know, not on the front of a magazine. Like, in the same way that when they first showed the Iron Man footage back in 2007, they had that one money shot of the practical, real-life Mark III suit, and people went fucking apeshit. I thought that's what they needed, and they didn't have that. But this is where I'm going to address something that one of our commenters left in one of the posts, is that that they were saying that, oh, DC needs to pull it back after what Marvel's been showing. Do they? No, they don't have to. We get excited about this stuff. We want a material to report about. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what they show here. What matters is how good the film turns out. The two Nolan Batman films have never had a strong presence at Comic-Con.
They've never shown footage.
They've never needed to. You know, what happened to them? Yeah, they fizzled without trace, didn't they? Forgotten films forever. So, you know, let's just keep thinking.
Well, that's when we knew, like, that's when I knew that, like, you wouldn't, I mean, granted, we were told some reliable peeps otherwise as well, but it was just, like, just common sense, as you just said, Phil. It's like, okay, they don't make a presence. That means Man of Steel, we won't be hearing anything about that at Comic-Con, because guess what? It's got the Nolan, it's associated with Nolan. There were other rumors about Wonder Woman and stuff that didn't pan out, which wasn't a surprise. From people elsewhere.
You know what I would have loved? Do you know what I would have loved, Jamie? They just they show a little video, and it's Nolan and David Coyer just sitting on a carpet in front of a fireplace with tons of notes and comics and a screenplay, just writing, and they just say, "Oh, hello, hi, I'm Nolan, I'm Coyer, and we're writing. Fuck off." And then they go back, and then they just say, "Right, well, thanks very much." Just to show that, you know, we're busy writing the film right now. Because I bet you, as we speak, that's what they are doing. They're cracking, they're just hammering this thing out, and they're just concentrating on getting Batman 3 written. I bet you that's what they're doing right now.
They might be a little further than that. I mean, I guess. Probably taking a smoke break right now from all that Inception press and whatnot, if I had to guess.
Because the only problem is, you know, because they didn't announce anything at Comic-Con, it means another 6 months of Riddler rumors.
I don't know. I mean, again, it's like, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, it does, dude. I
wouldn't be surprised if that was my jibber-jabber's way about out-talking Phil for a second there. I wouldn't be personally be surprised if we hear something in about 2 weeks on those two movies. Because, again, it's like, if everyone remembers, that's what happened with Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I mean, they waited. What's going on in the background right here? Well said. Yeah, they waited. You know, it was like a few days after. Yes. It was a few days after Comic-Con, and we got an announcement on Dark Knight. I mean, so, for all, I mean, and it'll probably be slow this week because the news. Everyone's going to be having their hangovers from Comic-Con, all the parties and the stabbings and all the news and whatnot. So this would be smart for WBDC to make their move within the next few days.
Mm-hmm. I hear the free liquor at Flynn's Arcade was excellent.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to play. So,
Well said.
That was my pathetic attempt at a segue, yeah. So we got the new Tron trailer this week, and they showed some footage to the crowd. And unfortunately, for me, the wonderful cascade of hype and anticipation has taken a slight dip this week, because this trailer was not as good as the last one. It just wasn't.
Now,
Phil, it wasn't as well.
I'd like to know, because a lot of people. I just wanted. Sorry to cut you off there, Phil. But seeing how you've seen the trailer, what did you think of the reunified Jeff Bridges? Some people said they liked the way he looked. Other people are like, this doesn't look that good.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. It looks fantastic when he's not moving.
Yeah, exactly. The lip movement is forced. It's Forrest Gump bad, in my opinion.
My goodness.
It's really, really distracting. And look, we're gonna. I always take the option, and Alou said this, and he's absolutely right. That let's not judge it till we see it in the finished film, and we won't. And I wouldn't be concerned if it were just for like one scene, like in X-Men, where you see the young Ian McKellen, Patrick Stewart. But from what we know, this is not the case. In fact, if this trailer sells anything, it's the fact that this Jeff Bridges young character is the villain. He's going to be in it a lot, and if he's talking a lot, this could be really a problem if it's distracting. So I'm a little concerned. But even without that, I just don't think the trailer was as well edited or put together as the last one. It didn't tell me enough. And as Jamie said off air, it's because they talk in this trailer.
Yeah, I mean we all talked about how great those Clash of the Titan trailers were, and they were. And then like we see the movie and they talk, and we're like, done. That's, you know, the finished movie. There's a reason why they didn't show you much dialogue on those trailers. You know.
But still, I mean, they like, I'm still, it still looks just delicious.
It's going to do great because it's, especially in those 3D screenings, it's going to do kick ass. Let's be honest here. And I mean kick ass in terms of, like, business, not in terms of the movie that came out earlier this year that tanked. You know, it's gonna make a killing of the competition, I think.
Regular people are talking about this.
Yeah.
Movie. Which is amazing.
Surprise. I would agree with you that. I mean, I saw the trailer when I went to see Inception. The movie looks beautiful, actually. I was quite surprised. So, I guess it'll have one thing going for it.
This is one movie that I want to see in 3D. There is no way I'm not going to see this
Holy
in 3D.
Shit.
And I hate 3D. But yeah, but you agree though. Like, this is the kind of movie that, yeah, it's shot in 3D. They set all of their scenes and all that for the technology / gimmick. Most of the latter, but that's the thing though. It's like, you know, why not see it in 3D? It's going to be amazing looking.
And I tell you what, I have never anticipated a soundtrack more in my life than this one. Everything I've heard about the score by Daft Punk is just making me want to buy that record when it comes out. I haven't actually, and we've only heard, I'm pretty sure the stuff we hear in the trailer is part of their score, but goddamn, I want to hear this score. I want this music now, because I am such a big fan of the original score by Wendy / Walter Carlos. And I don't know whether he was a man or she was a woman when they did the score for Tron, but amazingly talented person, did a fantastic score, which I play constantly. So I can't wait.
It's the soundtrack to your life.
Pretty much.
There you go. So let's see, other news. Let's see a little segue. Phil really wants to talk about this one. And my note here, for some reason, me being an idiot, says Judge. But it actually...
Judge Judy.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, exactly.
Carl, it's a movie about Mike Judge making people see Idiocracy, which I want to see.
Carl Urban is Judge Judy. No, but a rumor came out this week that Carl Urban had been offered the lead role in a new Judge Dredd movie that's being, I believe, independently financed. Is that correct?
I believe so, yeah. It's an independent company. It's a script by Alex Garland. And I went over to Ain't It Cool News this week. I don't know whether they had the original article or whether they linked it. I've forgotten, I'm afraid. But I'll give them credit. And they did it. They had someone do a script review of it. And they're going for a Die Hard theme with it, where basically it's like Dredd. I guess they're kind of going for a Casino Royale thing, because it's Dredd's first mission. Like, he's just gone into the judges, and most of the action takes place in this one tenement block where he has to, like, sort out some stuff. It's not a big thing, and we don't have him going into the desert and meeting mutants and Max von Sydow, so we can worry. Don't have to worry about that. From what they said, it's really good. It's really true to the character. And
will it translate?
How is it true to the character? Because he never takes the helmet off.
Exactly.
That's true to the character.
And that's why this movie is going to be, it's going to be a real challenge, because you've got Carl Urban, who is a great chameleon character actor. I think he is. I personally think he is the Tom Atkins of our generation. You look up in a genre movie and back in the 80s, and oh, look, it's Tom Atkins. There he is. And it's the same way with Carl Urban now. Like, oh, look, there he is. I was wondering where he was going to show up. And, you know, him as Judge Dredd.
But he's like that kind of James Marsden mold of actors where you feel like he hasn't got his due yet.
No,
he deserves it.
Well, he kind of has. I mean, he's in Star Trek. Everyone knows him for that. And that's on his grave, though, like Bones. That's the one, though. Same thing with Simon Pegg. Like, God love him. We love his stuff and whatnot. But to the masses, to the general public, he is Scotty forever. That's on his grave. It's Scotty. Doesn't matter all these.
Simon Pegg, you mean?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah?
I still think, the mass public, I think a lot of people know him as Sean, and then the more selective people know him from Space.
No, but that's still sort of a selective crowd, even saying Shaun of the Dead. I mean, like, that was a movie that has got a cult following. It's a great movie. I love it. But, you know, general public, I don't think, is really aware of Shaun of the Dead, sadly, or Hot Fuzz.
Oh, I don't think so. I'm with Ed on this one.
Okay. Fair enough. But anyway.
They did say they are doing it in 3D, but hopefully it's not a conversion job. I'm all for it. I mean, I think this movie is going to be the proof of whether what we suspected is the truth, that you can't make a good Judge Dredd movie because RoboCop got there first. We'll see. this one could be great. If it is, then that's fantastic, because this character really, there's a lot of potential there, especially if you shoot it right. I love the look of the Judge Dredd comics. They're not high literature. Anyone who tries to convince you they are is an idiot. But they look like something else. They're really, I mean, there's a lot of 80s and like Mobius designs in there. It's very punk sci-fi. If they can capture the look of that, then, oh, I'd be over the moon. I really, really like it. And, you know, if it's well written, that would help as well. So I'm really excited. But let's see if it happens. What are we doing? Oh, we'll turn over to Lou, because Lou wanted to talk about this one. Guillermo del Toro is doing something else.
Yeah. After his departure from The Hobbit, where, you know, he was saying, I've got all these big projects, I just can't spend any more time waiting for this all to get resolved. I've got big things in my hopper. And then he comes to Comic-Con and announces that he's doing The Haunted Mansion. I don't know about the rest of you, but I kind of went, huh?
Actually.
This is what compelled you to leave Middle-earth, is a haunted house? Like, I was just kind of like, what?
He walked out so pissed off back in 2003 about that Eddie Murphy movie. He said, "If only I could make that. Now is his chance."
I mean, I'm not slagging on him. Like, I'm sure that this movie will turn out to be, you know, a vastly superior to the Eddie Murphy version of that movie. But I don't know. To me, this seems kind of beneath what he was leading us to believe he was leaving The Hobbit
for
us.
Well, he's only producing. He didn't leave it for this. I mean, he's writing and producing it. He actually, his next movie is about to be his next directorial movie. He said it's going to be announced after Comic-Con, so my guess is we either hear it probably today or tomorrow, and we're recording this Sunday afternoon. So my guess is early this coming week we'll hear what he's actually directing next.
The early reports kind of
that was it.
Got me a little concerned, because they were saying he was directing it as well, and it quickly got cleared up that he was not. So that's kind of made it better for me. But obviously he has passion for this project, because he's have talked about this before. I wasn't aware of it, but it just kind of came like, you know, after what happened with The Hobbit, it was kind of like, you're doing what? Like, it would almost have been like, it says, oh, and by the way, I'm going to be doing Pirates of the Caribbean 5 or something like that. And I was going like, what? What?
Yeah, I agree, because if anyone else had said, like, they were going to do this, people wouldn't care. And they're like, oh, that's stupid, it's Del Toro, you go, yay. Which
it's just not the right project to announce after leaving The Hobbit. That's really what it was.
Well, of course, Lou,
what project would have been right? That's the thing.
Well, if he would have said Mountains of Madness or Frankenstein.
Or another one of his Spanish language films. I mean, I was kind of hoping
That's what I was going to say. Lou keeps saying every week that Del Toro's foreign language films are far better than his American products.
They are.
He's just not listening to you, Lou. I'm sorry. He's just not listening.
He's got a family to feed. I mean, you know, he did.
Well, I got him to leave the to leave The Hobbit. No, I just got to nudge him in the right direction after this. But
I would have been better off had he done a movie about Maniac Mansion than The Haunted Mansion. But that's
exactly. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Brain dead too.
Now we're talking.
Well, I mean, I'm curious what his next movie. I think it was also announced he's producing a Pinocchio movie as well. I think I read that this weekend.
That's sick.
Yeah, that's like he.
Because that Roberto Benigni one, it turned out so well.
Yeah, he's gonna remake. He's gonna remake Bad. You know.
Oh fucking hell!
Guillermo del Toro, I spit on your grip. You know, I don't know.
Stop, del Toro. Yeah. Stop.
He's got so many movies lined up though, as a producer, that you go, how many of these are actually gonna get made? And granted, it's normal for a filmmaker to be attached to a lot of projects, because some will move forward and some won't. It happens, but it's like, goddamn, dude. Let's some of the ones you're on now, let's hold off and get some of those made first. That's where I mean.
But it's back to what Ed said, that, you know, producers such a vague title these days. How many is he really, really doing, and how many
he's putting money for it. It could be that he's trying to develop it. It could mean he's actually directing it and he's pulling a Steven Spielberg with Poltergeist. It could mean absolutely nothing.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, what was the last movie his name was on?
So vague about who produces what.
Well, look at Splice. He barely was involved in that movie. His name is listed as a producer. By even the director's account, he was just like, I didn't really talk to Gabriel that much, you know. So,
the thing with Del Toro, he likes to talk about his work. Like, it's his passion. So, and, you know, in the course of interviews and whatnot, he's going to come up and, you know, he tells you, like, he loves this and he wants to do a movie about that or this or that. So, yeah, it seems like he's got a lot on his plate. But he never, to my recollection, mentioned doing a Haunted Mansion movie. So it's just kind of left field to me, that's all.
No, I know what you're talking about. It's like when Bryan Singer decided to do Superman. He's like, oh, everyone who knows me knows I love Superman. Everyone's kind of looking around like, what? Really? I don't remember hearing that. So that's what it kind of feels
Guillermo
like.
Guillermo del Toro's Splash Mountain in 3D. That's what
I was going to say the gummy bears.
It had to be in 3D.
Okay, what else we got here? I guess wrapping up, I think this is the last thing here. Yeah, Phil's got a – what was that? I didn't hear you.
No, that's fine. Go on, sir.
Okay. You better not have been smart talking to me, boy. I'll hear this back later.
No. I was going to tell you what you were going to say.
I know. But no, this is one that Phil actually had a really good question that Phil had. We talked about the Disney – or we didn't talk about the Disney panel earlier, but we are now. So they played some footage – right? No, we did. We talked about Tron. Fuck me. So at the end of that Tron panel, they showed a teaser to Pirates of the Caribbean. What's it called? On Stranger Tides? Is that what it's called?
That's right.
Thank you. Johnny Depp basically improvising in front of the camera.
Search for more money.
Yeah, exactly. I guess the question is, everyone went crazy about it, but you go, yeah, it's Pirates 4. Are people really excited about this franchise anymore? I mean, I guess someone would make the argument they are because Johnny Depp's last movie was Alice in Wonderland that made $1 billion. I'm leaning more towards no. I think this is going to be the one that doesn't do as well. I would be surprised if Pirates 4 does $300 million domestically because the third one wasn't that popular. And as time goes more and more along, people are sort of – I've heard more and more people say, you know, that second one sucked. The same people who when the second one came out said, oh, it's great. You should go check it out. It's the best movie ever. So – you do kind of wonder, like, are people going to – it's like what happened with Shrek Forever After. I mean, it did really well. It made $200 million, which makes it a blockbuster, but it's the lowest grosser of all four movies by quite a big margin. Is that going to be the same fate that Pirates 4 meets next year, next May? I think so.
Yeah.
Well
– I can see it.
The only thing – and Ed just hates the series. You haven't even seen them, have you, Ed?
I've only saw the first movie. I never saw the other two, and that was just because the first one was, and I've said it before, it just went, it would never end. It's like, why would I want to go see the other two? I feel it's because I'm not a huge, the pirate thing never really grabbed me, so.
And God love you for it, because that, you are absolutely right. First one's okay, you know, second one, ugh.
That period of history just doesn't interest me that much. I'm more interested in the more modern times, I guess. Which is why I can't wait to see Boardwalk Empire. But I'm just not a fan of just dragging franchises through. But it's just the way the culture is right now of just running these things into the ground.
I mean, if we're going to talk about time periods, I want to see a real movie about the 70s film revolution. That's what I want to see. You know, make it an HBO miniseries. Like, why not that? I want to see that. I mean, like, Easy Riders, Raging Bulls. Love the book. Did not like the documentary because they tried to condense it into 2 hours. And it's like, you can't condense 10...
Well, you know, there's no way that's ever going to happen. George Lucas is never going to want to see himself depicted that way.
But you could probably get away with doing a depiction of George Lucas. He can't sue you for, like, talking about him, can he?
Who knows? This is George Lucas.
The unauthorized version.
Well, they'll rename him. Like, instead of George Lucas, it'll be like Guy Lichtenstein. I don't know, something like that. Guy Lichtenstein's, you know, space battles. I don't know. I don't know.
But about Pirates 4. Thanks for that, guys. I'm really finding a way to pull it back now. I don't know, man. I think it'll do well in its opening weekend. Just like, I mean, modestly, like 40 to 50 or something. Nowhere near the grosses of the last two. And I think word of mouth's going to carry it from there. I can only just hope that it's decent so it can end the series on. And by the way, that is my hope, is that there is going to be no fucking cliffhanger ending on this one. That they will have the guts to at least end it, to cap it off, so we don't have to, you know, keep going on with this.
Yeah, I don't want to break your heart, my friend, but there is no indication that this will be the last one by the choice of the filmmakers. They've said like they want to do another trilogy.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Because apparently there needs to be more of this crap.
It's just, but I mean, the thing is, there is, I, I, it was, demonstrated by seeing that video. There just seems to be no way to make these movies look different. Like, you see Johnny Depp there, oh, there he is again, in that costume, doing that voice. You can't, it's just, we're going to see a trailer, and yeah, it's going to have Ian McShane in it, which is cool, with a beard, and it's going to have Penelope Cruz in it, which is interesting, and it's going to have mermaids and zombies, it says, well, fine, but it's still going to look like the first three. It's not going to look any different, unless the whole thing, like, takes place at night or something, and it's intentionally dark, but I don't think that's going to be the case. And, you know, we're going to see Jeffrey Rush again, and frankly, you know, I never thought I'd say this, but when I see Jeffrey Rush turn up in this, I'm probably going to roll my eyes, because it's like, I'm tired of you, I'm afraid, in this one as well. You've been ground into the dirt by this series. It's just not on my radar anymore, but I'm sure it'll make money, because I think, because it's coming out in May, and I don't think it's going to have
it's Memorial Day. Well, yeah, I mean, so I don't know. I mean, that's summer. It's funny because, like, 2011 is looking less and less impressive. I mean, like, for a while, it's like, man, it's going to be the summer. Now it's 2012 is going to be the summer. I mean, so many movies are coming out then. What do we have in 2011? I mean, around the same time, I mean, Mission Impossible 4 is supposed to come out. That's been pushed back. They haven't announced a release date, but it sounds like J.J. Abrams' Super 8 will probably end up coming out around May of that summer. They've said summer 2011, but no specific date. The Hangover 2 is going to open around the same time. Thor will still be in theaters. I mean, what else is there in May of next year? I can't think of anything.
When's Cars 2 coming out?
Cars 2 is in June.
Oh, right. Okay.
Like, right before Transformers 3, The Search for Spock, or whatever it's called.
there you go. I forgot Transformers 3 was coming out. Never mind. Well, I don't care.
You prefer anymore. to not remember
it was coming. I prefer not to, thank you. Thank you very much. So anyway, that was Comic-Con. I did want to end, actually, by talking about something that we talked about last year. I remember literally every single report I read about Comic-Con, they started by a big complaint about how unbelievably crowded it was. And I remember we were talking about this last year, saying they've got to change venues next year. There's no way the San Diego can contain Comic-Con anymore. It's grown to be too massive. I haven't heard any reports like that this year. So I wonder what's happened.
A stabbing. They're glad they're alive. That's what it is.
Yeah, I just think it's resigned acceptance.
Yeah.
Well, the lineups are just as long as they were last year, if not worse. So.
Well, I mean, you know what? Well, I will say that a lot of people bitched last year because the Twilight crowd were there, and they're not bitching this year, so I think that might be one of the reasons. Yeah. I mean, seriously, I mean, they just went out of their way to whine about that, and it's just whatever. But, I mean, we keep hearing those stories about, like, oh, they may go to Las Vegas or somewhere bigger. I don't know. I mean, I think the other complaint is they need to extend it a few days instead of, like, just cramming all these panels into so, you know, what,
well,
4 days?
Everything gets front-loaded, and then you spend all your time waiting in line.
Which wasn't really the case this year. I mean, did anything really of worth hit Thursday? It was really Friday and mostly Saturday. I remember
well,
last.
I did read about something really cool on Thursday. It's that they had this promotional booth for the Alien Anthology Blu-ray set that's coming out, and they built these pods just like on the Nostromo, where you could go in the pod and watch clips from the Alien movies in the pod, and apparently in this really claustrophobic environment, completely pitch black, watching those movies with the sound surrounding you, it was really, really fucking creepy, and I wish I could have gone just for that. That sounded really cool. But yeah, that's all that cool happened on Thursday, I think.
I don't remember anything. I mean, like, there was the Tron panel that morning, and then what else happened that day? Was that the day that they had the Visionaries panel with the Abrams Whedon panel, and that was kind of it? I mean, and then go ahead.
I'm sorry, the only thing I've heard, the biggest issue is, like, the Friday panels go for an hour, but the Saturday ones only go for 45 minutes, and it's inevitable with those things that things don't run to the clock, so some of the panels got went fairly short. So, I mean, people are lining up for 4 or 5 hours, and they get in there, and the panel's only, like, half an hour long, and then it's over, so...
Well, I don't understand why they've never done, like, a big panel on Sunday. I mean, by that point, no one's going to be around. Exactly. But, no, what I meant to say was, like, why not wait till Sunday for one of these panels? Because it'll die down a little bit. Make Sunday worthwhile, because at this point, all it is TV stuff. We just talked about before we started recording, nothing is coming out today. I mean, there was the Smallville panel, and I'm not knocking that, but that's not considered big sauce. I mean, it's like... Yeah. What other TV? I mean, like, it's Supernatural.
If I wanted to brandish a knife, the Smallville panel would have been the time to do it. It's like,
Well, you're going to get your wish. This is the last year.
Yeah, it's the last year. It's over. So, what you mean?
God.
It's what it is.
It was all a dream. That's going to end.
You've got to put the costume on, though, right?
If they don't, boy, that's going to piss off fans. And if I was a fan of that show, I would also be pissed off. I mean, I think they – I heard
the
a report –
the only fan of that show.
Or
heaven forbid, you know what I think goes on in Sunday? There's probably actual panels about comics. They do go on.
What?
When I was there.
Strange.
Nobody goes to them.
Yeah, no one does.
Yeah.
Well, I mean yeah, I mean,
at least with all these Marvel and DC movies, there's some sort of connection there. But I think the original purpose of this con is, like, it should be split off. If they want to do a TV con, they should do something separate for that.
Well, it's just silly seeing some of these things that are getting panels. I mean, we've talked about this before, but, like, Glee, not knocking the quality or its popularity, but it's like, what does that have to do with the Comic-Con crowd? Nothing.
And the funny thing is, what Lou just said, there is, like, a TV-like con every year, and I've never gone to this, and I've never had the chance. It's called Paley Fest.
Yeah, and there's
like
WonderCon
TV shows
as well.
Will hold their own
there's WonderCon.
Yeah. Paley
and
Fest,
I've never
WonderCon.
Been able to make
Yeah. Well, this,
I guess
I mean,
they find the specific date that Comic-Con is as well. It's just the optimum time because it's like in
absolutely.
The middle of summer. So some of these movies have either been shooting for a couple of months or they've started shooting and they've got a little footage to show, as opposed to if they had it like in April. Like, I think that's when WonderCon is. I think that's in April.
WonderCon's like in March or April, There's one in Chicago. Is that what I'm thinking? Is WonderCon Chicago?
No, WonderCon's in San
Francisco.
Okay, well, there's one in Chicago that I remember Nolan always...
Wizard World.
Okay, that's the one Nolan always goes to, because that's when he showed, like, Batman Begins footage and then Dark Knight footage for the first time. So it's like, you want to see something on Batman 3, it's like, you better go to that one.
But none of these cons are in Liverpool. That's the real issue here.
That's true.
Like, we have... And before you ask, no, we don't have Beatles con. Just, I know
I didn't even
it,
think about
don't.
That, but okay.
Well, you brought it up.
Exactly.
That's my fault. Well, there you go.
Everyone has like,
and well, just to, well, there you go, folks. I hope you enjoyed being at our Comic Con. I hope that your experience was good for you. Just to end the show, we're going to give a shout out to the commenters, as we always do now. So a shout out to Batman Fan. Just to prove it, sir, we didn't see Salt. I told you we wouldn't.
We did.
My good friend here, a Welsh film buff. Sir, we've had a discussion about this. You need to make the trip to the BFI IMAX in London. Go see Tron Legacy there. I guarantee you'll have an amazing time.
Or
Toy Story 3. Right now, get out there. Bankrupt yourself. Get out there right now. To A2 the H, who appreciated our tumbleweed joke. We appreciate that. Thank you very much. To Lighthouse, like I said, hope now you know what Ed's a captain of. And to Old Darth. Who the hell is that?
No
Who's
clue.
Old Darth? I've never heard of that. Ban that guy. Fucking
okay.
Hell.
Zing.
Anyway, there you go.
I agree.
Thank you.
For life.
Aw. No, anyway. Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week at the movies. Not in Comic-Con. That will have died down by then. Take it easy, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Take care.